listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or shame.
So, hi, Jeff. Hey.
So far, I've had caffeine, and it's first thing in the morning for me.
Yeah, of course. It's just after lunch here, and it's freezing. I don't know what it's like there, but the temperature's really dropped here.
No, it's about, I think it was 68 degrees this morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. So 68 is a couple of degrees cooler than we keep it inside the house. It's a very nice day today. Yeah. That's Texas weather for you.
Yeah, I know. You're lucky in that respect, but never mind. We're in the UK.
Yes.
So today, I think we're going to talk about emotional eating, aren't we?
And yes.
When it comes to children in particular, but actually I think that as usual, I think as we talk, I think it will overlap as well into, you know, how we behave and where it comes from as adults, I think as well.
Yeah, definitely. And we've been talking, you know, about definitely incorporating a lot of discussions, not only with children, but also with parents, because I think it's super important that we're taking into account everybody, especially if when you have a family involved. It's like it's not just about the parent and whatever fitness goals that they have or nutrition goals. And it's not just about the kids. I mean, you can't really separate any of that when you have a family situation, when you have a marriage and when you have kids involved and even extended family. So I think it's important we kind of focus in on everyone involved in that process.
Yeah. And I think without trying to go off on too much of a tangent, but I think it's really important because I think I see, you know, all too often when clients come to me and they have been trying to follow diets or fitness regimes that take them away from their families, that mean they can't have the same meals.
Yeah.
And, you know, that really does, it's really difficult because that obviously means then that they're acting in a way that doesn't align with their values. That's not what they had a family for, you know.
Exactly.
They can't see any other way. So, yeah, hopefully we'll help people to see another way. But I guess in terms of emotional eating then, I think this came up because of something we'd seen on social media around how emotional eating is not okay ever. What are your thoughts on that, Jeff?
Yeah, it was sort of inspired by a post that I saw where it said that going to the refrigerator is never the answer for in response to some kind of an emotional thing that occurred in your life. And when I read that, I thought, I don't really agree with that. And so kind of ran that by you. And that was sort of what spurred on the topic for today's discussion was this idea. Is it okay to emotionally eat? And if it is, what's the difference between kind of a healthy emotional eating versus crossing over into something that becomes unhealthy? Because obviously some people and a lot of people that we interact with are coming to us because they struggle with emotional eating. And that's been a big part of how they've arrived at this particular point in their life where maybe their health is struggling, whether their weight has gone out of control, whether they feel like they have lost control around food and in any environment that involves food. So,
and the shame and the guilt that can often be attached to emotional eating. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important topic when it comes to children, because I think, you know, the research has shown that the abuse of emotional eating in adulthood usually stems from what we experience and learn as children.
Yep.
And that's not to say that, you know, we're not trying to, I guess, tell parents that they're doing anything wrong or put any blame on parents or anything like that. I think it's just about giving the knowledge and the awareness to parents so that they can do the best that they can moving forward. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole point, is it's just recognizing when there's something that we can maybe do a little bit differently, whether it's in our own life, in the life of our kids, in our relationships with other people, all of those different things.
And I think it's a really poignant point to make, is that, you know, the fact that you saw what you saw on social media, and I think that, you know, I don't know about you, but my aim through this podcast is actually to make people aware actually of the reality of, you know, of the science, of the evidence that, you know, that backs what it is that we are saying. Because you will go onto social media, you will, you know, you'll watch the news, even, you know, our own over here in the UK, you know, some of the programs that are aired are just, you know, they're giving the absolute wrong messages, you know. And I think people can get so confused with that, and so you know, they just feel like they just don't know what to do anymore. And I think it's like you said, you know, we're seeing things all the time, aren't we, on social media that are mm-hmm. confusing people, because it's like, okay, so emotional eating is wrong. So if I ever emotionally eat, or if, you know, then I'm a bad person. Whereas no, that's not the case. It actually does serve. I think my point is that emotional eating, as with lots of things, have been completely taken out of proportion and exploited by a lot of people out there, I think.
Yeah, I think it's that soundbite nature of especially social media, because that particular post that I saw got a lot of likes and a lot of comments that were rooting this person on, and say, you know, with the little clappy hands and all that thing, all of those things. And I think often we don't think through these issues and what it really means if we were to take that particular approach and carry it out to its natural conclusion. You know, you see things like go big or go home, you know, all these different kind of motivational sound bites, but we don't stop and think about what that really means and whether that's even right. We just hear it and it sounds good. It's like what we needed to hear that day. Maybe we were lacking motivation. So now we hear something and it kind of sparks a little bit of motivation in us. So we think, oh yeah, I love that attitude. And then now we start pushing forward with it without really thinking about the implications in our own life, but even in the lives of others around us. And is that attitude going to be a problem for others that are witnessing us? Because, you know, we talk so much about modeling behaviors and attitudes to our family, to our kids, to others around us, and the implications of modeling incorrect ideas or dangerous attitudes or problematic mindsets and those kinds of things. So yeah, social media seems to fuel all of that. And so, yeah. Well, when it comes to emotional eating, how would you make a distinction between kind of what would you say is a healthy emotional eating?
So for me, okay, even people with the healthiest relationship with food emotionally eat from time to time. And I think for me, it's about actually knowing how you're feeling, and it's about knowing why you're making those choices. Does that make sense? I mean, I was just talking to a client this morning about this, because definitely over the last couple of weeks, you know, we're back in lockdown here in the UK, the weather has turned, you know, I've been super busy at work, the kids are feeling it. And I said to my client this morning, I said, I've probably eaten more emotionally this last couple of weeks than I have done in quite a while. But I recognize and I know why that is. I'm in a transient state at the minute. I mean, you know, at the minute, life is not, it's not going to continue like this, but, you know, some days are quite hard at the minute. You know, it's hard to stay motivated. It's hard to feel good. So I've allowed myself to have a glass of wine in the evening. I've allowed myself, you know, when I say allowed, you know, I've known why I have been emotionally eating. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think the issue arises when we don't know why we're doing it, okay? Because at the end of the day, we feel emotions because our body is trying to tell us something. And there are different systems, there are different emotional systems, without going into too much detail. I did a post about this morning, actually. And, you know, when those emotional systems are triggered, they're telling us something. They're telling us that our body needs something, yeah? So if we are, for example, you know, it might be that you're anxious about something, and so, you know, you have this emotional response. But what we tend to learn as children and growing up, which is where we're going with this, is that when we have those feelings, food will comfort them, food will help them, okay? But then as adults, what we soon then learn is that it it doesn't fix emotions. It's a temporary fix, isn't it? And actually what we need to understand is what going on. So if we're anxious, why is it we're anxious, and what is going to help us with that? Or if we're upset or angry at something, what actually would be a better way of coping with that? So an example is I was talking to a client about this a couple of weeks ago, and it was really, really funny because she got a call while we were drawing our session. And on the call, it was a broadband provider, and a broadband provider had messed up, and she got off the phone and she just put the phone down. Right? She was like, oh, for God's sake, she was really annoyed. And she went, I just need some chocolate now. And I was like, no, you don't. What are you feeling right now? You're feeling angry and frustrated. Actually, what is going to help you right now? What's going to help you right now is actually writing a letter of complaint or ringing them back and complaining. You need to deal with that emotion you're feeling right now rather than trying to mask it and fix it with food, because that's not going to fix the problem. You're probably going to end up eating food that you don't really want, or, you know, or overeat the food. So you're going to end up then, because the issue, of course, then is that when you combine the emotional eating with a diet mentality, which my client had, so, you know, she then would have felt the guilt and the shame, etc. So it just becomes more and more complex, you know, not only when we're using it to kind of deal with emotions, but also when we're mixing it with the diet culture, with the idea that we're not allowed to eat those foods, we've got to restrict those foods. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so, and it taps into the enjoyment of that food too. It sort of takes away from it, because now you're eating this food that you would normally enjoy, but you're frustrated and angry, and you're stewing on this issue with this provider who has annoyed you, and you're just shoveling food down, and so you're not enjoying the food, and it's in the background, and you should be enjoying it. Save it for later when you've had a chance to cool down and you're relaxed, and it's the end of the day, and you say, you know what, I feel like a glass of wine and some chocolate, and now you can grab a small serving of chocolate and enjoy it with your glass of wine while you're sitting there watching the fireplace, or, you know, whatever it is. But you're
exactly what I did last night.
Yeah. And so that's, and I guess that would be a good way of thinking of this emotional eating in a healthy way, which is using it while you're unwinding and that kind of thing, versus using it out of anger, frustration, despair, those kinds of things.
But it is, yeah, and also sometimes it is okay as a comfort. Like I've said to you, I last night, you know, and it's, we can't get out, we can't do anything. So, you know, you're doing it, and you know the function that it's serving. But actually, if there is something else that's going on, like, you know, clients will sometimes emotionally eat because they're bored or they're lonely or they're tired. Well, actually, what is your body telling you? You're tired. You need to lay down, you need to rest, okay? This is another strategy that I've been using with one of my clients. She's recognized now that she used to emotionally eat a lot in the evenings, and she's now taking time to have some self-care. She's, you know, she said she's having a bath, she's doing all sorts of things to look after her self-care, because that's the other thing, okay? Emotional eating is usually a result of not looking after ourselves properly. It's a result of not listening to our emotions and not listening to what's going on. Now, to link this back to why we're talking about this today, about children, this is the thing, is that as children, we are often learn that this is how we cope and we deal with our emotions. Think about when you were a child and you fell over, and what did your mum do? She gave you a lollipop. Think about when you were upset, and what did your mum do? She gave you some chocolate. Think about when you were stood frustrated and angry and bored in the queue at the supermarket. What did your mum do? She got you some chocolate to shut you up, because that's what they did. They put the chocolate all there to, do you know what I mean? So as parents feel, you know, and we do it with the best intent, of course, but all that we do, if we are just trying to, you know, pacify our children and get them over their emotional bumps in the road with food, we're teaching them that it's okay to do this as adults.
Yeah, and that's a good example with the kids, because often we do, as parents, we're trying to just calm the situation. We're just trying to get through it, and we're thinking very short-sighted in the way that we look at things. So rather than doing the hard thing, which is approaching the discipline aspect as an example, maybe there's a discipline issue that needs to be addressed with the child in the grocery store when they're there, manners, whatever it is, rather than doing the hard thing and dealing with that, we just try and pacify it to get through to the next to the next moment, you know, where we avoid that. And, you know, me coming from, in my first marriage, my late wife was very abusive verbally toward myself and toward the kids. And I can't tell you how many times I, just to calm the situation, I didn't address any of the issues, and rather I would do something like, you know, something, whether it involved food or some other thing. And I think all of these different kinds of things that we do as parents, things that we do in our own life, it's basically a way of masking the real issue, dealing with the real issue. And so if we're using food as a way to try and deal with issues, to mask problems, to not have to avoid dealing with the root issue, then that's where it can become a problem. So like with kids, and instead of teaching them how to cope with these different situations without food, and then using food as in times of celebration and times when it should be enjoyed.
That's absolutely fine. That, you know, and I think the thing is that what the research seems to show quite heavily, as it does with a lot of, you know, food addictions, which obviously don't exist, but that's another topic. but, you know, food cruxes or food issues, it's learned behavior. Okay. Research shows that abusive emotional eating is learned. Well, emotional eating actually is learned, you know, whether it's a healthy emotional relationship or it's not, it is learned. Because like you said, you know, we learn that, you know, we celebrate on a birthday, we have some cake. Cake doesn't serve a nutritional function in our lives. Cake doesn't give us what we need to survive as human beings. Cake gives us comfort, pleasure, it's a celebration, you know. So, but it's okay, it's a very okay part of our lives, you know, it's absolutely fine. Yeah. The problem is, like you know, when either we restrict it or we're using it to mask emotions. And, you know, and I think this is the thing, is that, you know, even as a parent myself, and I say this all the time, you know, I really have to be careful because, you know, Leo, the other day, I remember Leo fell over, my youngest fell over and he hurt himself. And I remember my thing was, oh, I'm going to give him some chocolate to make him feel better. And I was like, no, you're not. No, you're not. You're going to sit him down and you're going to go, oh, what? And I gave him a cuddle and I rubbed it better. Would have been quicker and easier to me just here, have some chocolate shop. But, you know, because instinctively, that's what I wanted to do, because instinctively, that's what I was taught. You know, I was taught you make yourself feel better. You know, so even me as a parent, I'm learning. But I think the point is, it's just being aware and letting our children feel their emotions, because the only way that we're going to make good choices moving forward with anything in life, you know, is when we know how we feel. If we don't know how we're feeling, we're not going to make the best choice. And that applies to anything, doesn't it? But it applies especially obviously to your nutrition. If you don't know what's going on, if you don't know how you're feeling, you know, if you don't know what impact food is going to have on you because you are living by external rules. And this is really interesting, actually, going off a little bit. But one of my clients, a couple of my clients this week, actually, really, really poignant moments. I keep using that word, poignant. But they've said that how they're not feeling guilt anymore when they eat things that maybe when they've overeaten or they've ate till they feel a bit uncomfortable. They said the reason that they're not feeling guilty is because they're listening to their bodies and they know what's going on. They know how they're feeling. So one of my clients said, she said she overate some biscuits and she was eating emotionally. She was, but she knew that. She ended up overeating them. And she said, but instead of feeling guilty, I just recognized that it made me feel uncomfortable. And so now, like next time, she now knows how much is enough and how much is right because she's listening to her body. She said, in the past, I never would have felt that. Another one said to me this week, she said, I never would have felt the guilt. I never would have felt the bloating. I never would have felt the uncomfortableness. I never would have felt the sluggishness because I would have spent all my energy feeling guilty and ashamed and stressing about what I'm going to restrict or thinking stuff this I'm going to, do you know what I mean? So my point there is, to make good choices, you have to know how you feel. Oh,
no, go ahead. Finish. I'll let you finish here.
So if we're not letting children feel those emotions and experience those emotions and helping them to become more emotionally resilient, we're just encouraging them to abuse food later on in life.
Yeah. So would you say then that the difference between healthy emotional eating and unhealthy emotional eating is somewhat of the intent with it and why we're using it and how we're approaching that situation? So if we're approaching it from a mindful perspective. So for example, we had a hard day at work. We just want to relax, enjoy something that tastes good. And so we sit down and we have a nice dessert at the end of the day and we don't feel bad about it. We just used, you know, we felt, we enjoyed that emotional response that it brought to us versus coming home and then just slamming food down mindlessly while we're stewing over what all of those bad things that happened during that day. So it's about how we're approaching it versus the fact that we're using it in response to an emotional situation or using it to elicit an emotional response.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point there about how you said, because that is a clear abuse of emotional eating is mm-hmm. if you are literally, and this is, you know, I see this a lot with clients in the early days, they will literally come home and not even, I had one client who she said she'd come home, she'd been starving herself all day and felt crappy, felt tired. Because again, if we're not eating well, we're not looking after ourselves properly, right. So we're going to emotionally eat more. And this client would come home and she said, I would just shove things in my mouth. And she said, and I would eat so fast because I think if I ate it so fast, it wouldn't register. It wouldn't matter. The calories wouldn't matter. You know, and we know where that leads.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think there are some really, the things that you need to take, you know, I think you'll know if you're abusing emotional eating. For that, one of the things there, if you're not actually getting the enjoyment, if, you know, emotional mm-hmm. eating should actually be, when you've got a healthy relationship with food, it's an enjoyable experience. You're enjoying that chocolate. There's no guilt attached to it. Does that make sense? So you are mindful and you're aware of why you're doing it. I think there is this whole thing as well of, you know, restriction. So I think if you are restricting and forbidding foods and living by external diet rules that don't align with your own values, etc., that can encourage emotional eating. And there's a reason, one of the reasons for that is that I think what I've found anyway with my clients is because they're so preoccupied with being good on their diet, they're thinking about food all of the time. So when something goes wrong, it is their default. You know, it's like, well, I'm trying to fight, I'm battling with food all the time. So the minute something goes wrong, I'm going to reach for food because it's just on the top of my mind. And, you know, and also, you know, when emotional eating is an issue, you know, if it does become your only coping mechanism.
Exactly.
So it's about having a bag of strategies, but it's about, you know, and this isn't, you know, as adults, it's about us understanding that emotional eating has served a purpose. You know, thank food, thank it for having a role in our lives. Thank it. I mean, and if you have abused emotional eating to this point and something's clicking with you right now, you just need to kind of think, okay, it served a purpose. It got me through some really crappy times in my life, but now I'm ready to develop new strategies. Now I'm ready to actually understand what is going on. And if you're a parent, you know, also helping your children to do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, there's so many aspects of food and different ways that we use food, different things surrounding food, whether it's preparation, the serving, the events where we have food that involve emotions. And so it's important that we are approaching it in an appropriate way because we want to enjoy those different events and those different activities that we're at as well. And if we're attaching guilt and shame, or if we're worrying about what we're eating during those times from kind of this diet mentality, then it can take away from the enjoyment of those events. You know, you have food is part of our history and our culture and just about every social situation that we have. And so it's meant to be enjoyed. And that's an emotion. That's an emotional response, that enjoyment. And that's why we include it as part of those different celebrations and gatherings and all of those different activities. And so we want to be able to thoroughly enjoy it. And the only way we can do that is if we're in control of that food, and if we're somehow mindful of it. And so we're actually thinking about the different flavors and the foods, and it's part of romance, and it's part of, there's bonding during the preparation of the food. All of these different emotions are tied to it. And if we want the, you know, if we don't want to be sitting trying to eat a romantic dinner, worrying about how many calories this has, or, oh, I shouldn't be eating this, and now we're taking away from that romantic moment. All of these different things surrounding food, and
absolute sense as usual, you know, and I think there's just something that you did say there about control and try. And I, do you know, one thing I always, this is a bit of it, but I always talk to my clients about trying to move away from thinking about control and think about being in charge, letting your body be in charge. Yeah. It's a very subtle difference, but for me, when you talk about, oh, I'm in control, I've got control of it, it's still giving that diet kind of, you know, where it's about being in charge. And because when you're letting your body be in charge, you are going to make choices that make your body feel good. Does that make sense? Your body actually doesn't want to be overloaded with processed crap all the time, excuse me, you know. It doesn't. It wants nutrition, it wants to feel good, and at times it just does want to eat just for emotional reasons. And it, you know, it's funny what you said there, and exactly what you said about this whole socializing and enjoying. And I was reading something, and it was a study, and I think it showed that you know, very often, I did a little video on this actually, very often we think that the Mediterranean diet is healthier because what it consists of. Now, I'm sure that has something to do with it, but actually this study also showed that Americans, the British, they do not get the same enjoyment and pleasure out of food as the French and the Italians. When we think about cake, we think about guilt. When they think about cake, they think about celebration. When they're preparing a meal, okay, they take their time. They spend time with their families, enjoying it. It's a big event. It's something to enjoy. And when you ask them when they stop eating, this study asked them when they stopped eating, they said that they stop when they're full. They stop when their body tells them they've had enough. You ask an American or a British person, it's usually, I stop when my plate is empty. Yeah. So
that's a very different way of looking at it.
It's a very different way of looking at it. And I think it just goes to show that we focus so much, you know, on the what of what we should be eating, when actually it's how we're eating, isn't it? And I think it's about listening to our bodies and let that be in charge. And I think that's one thing that many of my clients, when they come to me, they're like, well, you're not just going to give me a plan. You're not just going to tell me what to eat. And I'm like, well, we'll look at that. But actually, the majority of the work that we're going to do is around how you're eating and why you're making the choices you're making. Because you get that, you crack that, and the other bit, little bit of education, you'll be sorted.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, when you've started it, when you brought up the Mediterranean diet, when we, you know, the blue zones around the world where the highest number of people who reach 100 years old, where they've kind of researched this and found this to be the case, part of it is diet, but a huge part of it are these other factors surrounding it as well. So it's not 100% diet there. There's physical activity, there's social interactions, there are all of these other factors that come into play to get a person to reach that ripe old age of 100. It's not just a perfect diet. And so I think that it's important that we're teaching that to our children, that we're working on that in our own life, that we're helping them when it comes to emotional eating, that it's an active choice that they're making when we eat these kind of these food choices that are tied to our emotions, that's an active choice that we're doing. It's not mindless, that we're learning to slow down some, pay attention to how we're feeling, and using those other coping mechanisms in combination with that, to using those other coping mechanisms to truly deal with the problem. Maybe the food and the emotional response that it brings to us is just part of that process. But it helps us to then enjoy that food a lot more too, and which is why we would eat those enjoyable foods is to actually enjoy them. And if we're not mindful and going at it, at a reasonable pace when we're eating those things, we just completely lose sight of it and don't even remember that we ate
all
of that delicious food. So.
Yeah. And I think, what you said there, I think there's a couple of things as well. And I think what you said there about not enjoying the food. And when you think about it, when I mentioned earlier about the example with Leo and he'd hurt himself, and I was like, oh gosh, if he was blubbering and was upset because he'd hurt himself, he's not going to enjoy that chocolate like he would have done if it was, you know, just something. And I think the other thing as well, one of the other things we have to bear in mind that can also spark emotional eating with children as well is the restriction. If we forbid foods and we restrict foods, and this comes back to the division of responsibility, doesn't it? You know, you having, making sure that children have a structure, but without forbidding things. Because if we forbid things, it then becomes this, you know, this pinnacle of, you know, and then that, then it becomes emotionally appealing, doesn't it, as well?
Right.
Whereas if all foods are okay, if all foods have equal emotional value, because this is what I always say to people, is that not all foods are nutritionally equal, as we know, but they should all be emotionally equal. You know, we should we should not be, you know, because I think if we forbid foods or if we call foods good or bad, we're automatically sparking an emotional response, aren't we? Whereas if we just see foods for what they are, you know, then, you know, it doesn't give them as much power over us.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a good point to make about that, because it's just such an important skill to learn if we haven't learned that, if that's not how we grew up, if we find ourselves in a place right now as an adult where we do attach these feelings of good and bad around certain kinds of foods, and it just changes, it takes away from the enjoyment of it too. You know, when you start thinking of chocolate as a bad food, then it's very easy for, you know, it, rather than getting the nice emotional response of eating a good piece of chocolate or a nice slice of cake, now we're eating that, but now we're getting the opposite effect. We're getting a feeling and an emotional response that was not what was intended. And so now we're missing out on the enjoyment of that food, which is the whole reason to eat those kinds of foods to begin with. It's to actually enjoy them. Because as you said, they're not, you know, a slice of cake is not new. It's not providing our body with nutrition it needs to function. You know, obviously an endurance athlete, he needs a lot of high amounts of carbohydrate. You could make the argument that yes, it does. But in general, for the average person, a piece of cake is not beneficial, but there's from a physical standpoint, but it's also not necessarily harmful either. Taken in the right way, used in the right, in the context of a overall balanced diet, you can do that and live a perfectly, wonderfully healthy lifestyle.
It's unhealthy to not allow those things.
And exactly. I
think also extremely unrealistic, given the society that we live in, giving, you know, our food environment has, our lifestyles, not just our food environment, our lifestyles have massively changed. And to be able to navigate that without ever allowing yourself a bit of chocolate or a glass of wine, it's just, you know, it just takes away, you know, that so much of life, you know, going out, enjoying things, socializing, it's going to incorporate some of that. But it's about making sure as well, of course, because when you are listening to your body and you're putting your body in the driving seat, like I said before, it will make choices that feel good. If you're eating processed foods all of the time, you're not going to be feeling good. You're not. Right. And the ironic thing is, though, is as you know, obviously, the more that we eat those processed foods, almost the more that we are driven to eat them as well, because obviously they're, you know, but that's another conversation, isn't it?
Right.
But I think, you know, health isn't, being healthy isn't clean eating such a, it's funny because I mentioned this to you, didn't I, about how I got Leo, because even when you are giving the messages, the best messages in the home, even when you are being the best role model you can be, children are going to go out into the big wide world and they're going to learn other things. And this is like Leo last week, I keep meaning to do a proper post on this because it actually came from him writing a shopping list, and on his shopping list he had broccoli, cheese, eggs, and Cocoa Pops. And he said to me, Mummy, Cocoa Pops are the only unhealthy thing on there. So we had a conversation, and I have to be really careful. You have to be really careful not to be too explicit. Yeah. But anyway, I can't remember exactly what I said, but I did talk to him about fun foods, you know, going, mm-hmm. you know, all foods are good, you know, nothing's, it's, and then he said, well, he was like, but if you ate Cocoa Pops all of the time, Mummy, that wouldn't be healthy. So right. I said, you're right, Leo, but if you ate broccoli all of the time, that wouldn't be healthy either. Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, he obviously did take that on board and process that, because then later on that week, he was eating his Cocoa Pops and goes, Mum, these are fun food. Cocoa Pops are good because mm-hmm. they're fun food. So he did understand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that was a great point when you had mentioned that about the broccoli. And yeah, if that's all you eat, then you're going to be... Right. Yeah. You're going to be missing out on other things too. And so you made a good point earlier in the week on in something else we were talking about. You said something about thinking more in terms of adding, what should I add to my diet as opposed to what do I need to cut out? And I really liked that perspective, that little shift in it, because when we think about what to add to our diet, it's like, what do I need to add? Oh, I need to, you know, maybe I should add some more protein. Maybe I should add some more vegetables. And when we do that, often what happens is that if we're listening to our body, then we're not as prone to going to these other kinds of foods that maybe are not as nutritionally beneficial to our body. And so rather than going and approaching your diet as, okay, what do I need to take out? It's more of, well, what do I need to put in to my diet to really make me feel better, to make me go to the bathroom better in the mornings, to have more energy? You know, do I need to eat more carbs? Do I need to eat more protein? Do I need to eat more fat? Because my body isn't feeling well. My hormones are not functioning like they do. So, you know, thinking in that additive term, in those additive terms instead of restrictive terms, helps us to then really approach our diet from, you know, how am I going to benefit my body? But at the same time, it still leaves room for enjoying those other things and in an emotionally healthy way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's about that. If we focus a little bit more on variety, we'll get a better balance. And I've got a perfect example. I know we've been talking a bit. I mean, I was speaking about that just with a client today, but I've got another example of a client who she doesn't believe, she was like, well, I don't diet. I allow myself whatever I want, but bread's my downfall. I can't eat, you know, blah, blah. And I was like, well, she's, but I still eat it. And I was like, but emotionally, you're seeing it as bad. Emotionally, you're restricting it. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we were looking at what she was eating, and yeah, she was overeating bread. She was, but you know, she was doing it, like I said, because it's almost like she was emotionally restricting it, which meant then that she was overeating it. Does that make sense? So yeah. I think it was, we were talking about what she was eating, and basically I think she was eating like 3 or 4 slices of bread with her lunch, and her lunch was usually a pasta dish or something, and then she would have bread on top of that. So it was very, you know, so I said, we need to look then at what you need to be adding, okay, mm-hmm. to that meal. So she started putting vegetables into her pasta and stuff like that. So, and then what she found is that she was then not eating as much bread. She was still eating the bread, okay? Wow. She was still having the bread with her meal, but she was only having a slice or two max, rather than having mm-hmm. the 3 or 4 slices she was having before, because she was having incorporating those vegetables and that fiber as well. And that's a habit that stuck with her now. We did this a few months ago, and now she's definitely mm-hmm. incorporating more vegetables, more fiber, more beans, more all those kind of things, which mean that she doesn't have to skip the bread, but she's incorporating other stuff, which means she's got a better balance. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's such a good point. And yeah, you know, we're kind of going off in another direction with this conversation, but I think it's just all of these things tie in so well together. You know, when you have managed to do something like you did with that particular client, that's going to help with that emotional eating aspect, because yeah. now you've given her a strategy and a tool to just naturally move away from this negative emotional attachment to bread that she had developed, because she thought of, you know, bread is my downfall right there. That's a negative mindset around bread. It's bad. It's, you know, it's the thing that brings me down. It's the thing that causes me problems in my life and in my diet. And now you've given her a simple tool by adding something in rather than saying, we need to cut your bread back to one or two slices at a meal. You're saying, here, put this stuff in. And then what happens? Now she's only having one or two slices in the meal without having to say, well, I'm cutting that out. So I think that might be a good way to wrap up our discussion today, is to just think about these ways that, you know, incorporating better coping mechanisms may be one way to help yourself better manage emotional eating. So if you're struggling with emotional eating, finding some of these specific coping mechanisms to deal with what it is that's triggering the emotional eating will certainly be beneficial. And so that may mean you need to add other things into your life to help do that, other strategies. And when it comes to your food, it may be that you just need to think about it more from that additive approach.
Definitely. Because we're not getting, you know, here, you know, the Western diet, you know, the way that we're definitely not getting all of the vitamins and the minerals and the fiber that we need. But, you know, this whole, you know, we've gone off on one, but I think that actually that just adds to the point that, you know, nutrition isn't black and white. Emotional eating is very complex. And, you know, there are lots of things that do need to be considered and taken into account, which of course we both do with our clients. It's definitely something that I go into quite a lot of detail in my program that I'm starting in the new year. And I know it's something that you do with your clients as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this was a great discussion. And so as always, if you have any questions at all, if emotional eating is an area where you struggle, please don't hesitate to reach out to either one of us. And we'd love to answer any questions. Also, keep in mind that we're going to be doing some live some live interactions on LinkedIn, Facebook, those kinds of things. So be sure and look in the show notes. We'll put links in there. Well, we already have links in there for our contact information for our LinkedIn profiles, but keep in mind that we're going to be doing these more often. And so you may want to make sure to follow us on social media, turn on your notifications so you get notifications when one of us or both of us go live. And so that can be a great time to get some one-on-one interaction with us also and ask those questions that you have, those specific questions that you may have in that live format.
Yeah, well, we're going live on Monday, aren't we? 4 p.m. Yes. Here. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Monday the 23rd. I don't know when we're going to publish this, but the 23rd, we're going live, aren't we, at 4 p.m. UK time, which will be, what time is it for you?
Let's see, that would be 10 a.m. Central time in the U.S.
Okay, yeah. So if anybody's got any questions or wants to join us on LinkedIn, then that'd be great.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening as always, and we look forward to putting together another wonderful podcast for you in the future.